In today's episode, I'm going to tell you about a town that was sparked by a general store, ignited with a school, and exploded with an idea. Erica from Long Island, New York suggested it, and now I'm giving you Sedalia, North Carolina. Welcome to the NC Everything Podcast. I'm your host, Curtis, and this is a bi-weekly show where I talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. Again, welcome all listeners, new and old, or veteran listeners and new listeners. Normally, I do a lot of talking before the episode starts, but I don't know if you can tell behind me, but there's some big thunderhead clouds rolling in, so I'm going to go ahead and get into it before the rain gets here. I do want to say, as always, if you like the show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Check out the links below so you can get more NC Everything on the Facebook group. My email address is down there in case you have a suggestion for a show. And if you're watching and you'd rather listen, you can find me on most podcast players. And if you're listening and you want to put a face behind the voice, there's a link in the description below for the YouTube channel. Also, before I get started, I forgot to mention this in the last episode. I'm trying to get better at bumping my other show I do with my wife, but we do Tasting NC, and it's a show where we taste everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. And the next episode coming out, I think, is hot sauce. Actually, by the time this episode comes out, hot sauce should be on the air. Tasting NC, you can find it under the NC Everything Podcast YouTube channel, and I'll have a link below for that too. So anyway, let's go ahead and get into it. Like I said, Erica from Long Island, New York suggested this. The reason I got a suggestion from somebody from Long Island, New York is because she won't be in Long Island for much longer. She's moving to Sedalia, North Carolina, so that was her suggestion. And she might actually be in Sedalia now. I'm not sure, but if you're listening to this, Erica, thank you for the suggestion. So this story is mostly about Charlotte Hawkins Brown. We'll start with her anyway. She was born on a farm near Henderson in 1883, exactly 100 years before I was. She was the granddaughter of a slave. And I tried to find out if her granddaddy worked on that same farm. I couldn't find out for sure. But in 1888, she was 5 years old. Her and her mama moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'm not sure about where her father was during all this or if he was still in the picture. But the reason they moved to Massachusetts was to get away from the Jim Crow laws of the South. And her mama wanted Charlotte to have a better chance at education. The South was still pretty segregated, and options for black people in the South for education were still pretty limited. Up north, her mama marries a brick mason named Edmund Hawkins. Now, it turns out Charlotte was pretty gifted when it came to her schooling. She attended Alston Grammar School and the Cambridge English High School. Well, while in high school, she gets a job as a babysitter for a family in Cambridge. One day, she's walking down the road, and with one hand, she's pushing a baby carriage, and with the other hand, she's reading a copy of the book, Virgil. Now, about that book. Publius Virgilius Maro was an ancient Roman poet. The book she was reading was one of 12 books that make up an epic poem that follows the journey of Aeneas from after the fall of Troy. Anyway, Aeneas leads his troops to Italy, where they eventually establish the city of Rome. And the point is, this book is pretty advanced for a high schooler, for one thing, but it's certainly advanced for a black high schooler back in that time. So this unusual sight caught the attention of another lady who was walking down the street. Her name was Alice Freeman Palmer. She was the second president of Willis League College. Alice Palmer was immediately intrigued by young Charlotte, and she introduces herself and begins a conversation. She learns that Charlotte planned to enter the state normal school in Salem, Massachusetts, following her high school graduation. And remember, a normal school is a school for teachers. It's teaching teachers how to teach. So Miss Palmer, she offers to pay for all of Charlotte's schooling. And in 1901, Charlotte meets a field secretary for the Women's Division of the American Missionary Association. Google says that the American Missionary Association, or AMA, was an abolitionist group founded on Protestant beliefs. Anyway, it focused on getting rid of slavery, education for African Americans, racial equality, and promoting Christian values. The field secretary persuaded Charlotte to return to North Carolina and serve the American Missionary Association in its effort to educate blacks in North Carolina. So after receiving permission to leave the Salem Normal School, before she actually had a chance to graduate from the normal school, she goes back south on October 10th, 1901, back to North Carolina. Now remember, Charlotte was born in Henderson, North Carolina. I don't think she had ever been into the area of Sedalia. So because of this, she thought she was going to this really well-established school down toward Greensboro. When she got there, she found what was literally just a train stop in the middle of nowhere called Sedalia. And this, even though it was a nothing town at the time, or what seemed to be a nothing town from where she had been in Massachusetts, this is where Charlotte would start what would become her life's work. So now let's jump to the beginning of Sedalia, and then we'll come back and put them all together. Sedalia is located in eastern Guilford County. It's between Burlington and Greensboro. The whole town is about 2.3 square miles, and it started with a store and a post office. But really, the store was the post office. It was a general store with a post office in the back. It wasn't even a community or a whole an official town yet. It was just that general store on the side of the road. The store was owned by Robert B. Andrews, or Robert B. Andrew. He built the place and opened it up, and nobody really knows why he named the store or the post office Sedalia, but they think it came from his hometown in Missouri. I don't think his hometown was Sedalia, but everything I read, it sounds like Sedalia was a name somewhere in Missouri, and he just kind of brought the name with him. Anyway, that was the name of the post office, so that's what people started calling the area around the post office. And even though it was a store and a post office, it was also the congregation area. People would gather there and, you know, they'd get their mail and they'd buy their goods, but they'd also get the daily gossip. Now let's get back to Charlotte Hawkins Brown. She actually kind of landed in McLeansville, not right in Sedalia. It's about 4.5 miles away, I think. Anyway, Miss Hawkins, she went to the Bethany Institute. She goes to the Bethany Institute in Sedalia. And today, that's known as the Bethany Community Church. And it was a little bitty building. You know, again, she thought she was going to come to this big, well-established school, you know. And it was literally the school was this one room in this little bitty church. And the students, they weren't, you know, these up-and-coming scholars. They were literally like 50 barefoot kids. Well, Charlotte, she did her best to try to educate these kids, but the American Missionary Association decided to close the school in 1902. And this didn't really sit right with Charlotte. She had a mission, and she planned on sticking to it. So she digs in, and she works to establish a whole new school in the area. She wanted to recreate the kind of education that she was offered in New England. And really, that was nearly unheard of in the South. You know, the South is for farming. We didn't have for whites and blacks, but especially blacks, we didn't have a lot of emphasis on education. You learn what you need to do to till the land, and that's all you need. A lot of people could grow 1,000 acres of cotton, but they couldn't read 3 words out of the Bible. And in 1900, even though there were, it says, about 2,000 privately operated schools for African Americans, most of the teachers teaching these African Americans only had an elementary school level education. So Charlotte, you know, obviously she had a far, far higher education than most teachers who are currently working in the South. So if she was going to continue her mission, she needed some money. So she heads back up to Massachusetts to get some funding. And Alice Palmer had introduced her to some of the high society in Massachusetts before she came back to North Carolina. So she spoke with Harvard's Charles W. Eliot and Charles D. McIver. They were Harvard bigwigs. They liked her idea, and they offered her some money, or wanted to help her anyway. And she was able to raise enough money to keep the McLeansville School open for just one more year. Sadly, Alice Palmer would die the next year in 1902. So Charlotte reorganized the school and named it the Palmer Memorial Institute in honor of Alice Freeman Palmer. And that's just a name. The Palmer Memorial Institute, it sounds really nice, but they didn't have a school yet. In fact, the first class met in the back of a remodeled blacksmith's shop. And starting a school in the South in 1900 for little black kids, that sounds like it's got disaster written all over it for racial reasons. But surprisingly, the school was actually really well received in the area. Charlotte Palmer, she taught the reading and writing and math, but a lot of the school's education was kind of focused around agriculture and industrial lessons. And, well, agricultural and industrial living in the rural setting, to be more specific. Well, as word spread about what Charlotte was doing here in North Carolina, a lot of people, they got pretty interested in what was going on. And word got all the way back to Massachusetts. So a lot of highfalutin people in Massachusetts and in North Carolina, they got real curious about what was going on. And so money started pouring in to try to help Charlotte with her mission. In 1925 alone, she was able to raise $350,000. And that's $350,000 in 1925 money. And with this money, she was able to really expand the school, build some more buildings, but a fire tore down or burned down some of the buildings in 1917 and 1922. And I swear, it seems like every episode, every historical episode I have, there's a fire that burns something in the show. But this didn't slow down what she was trying to do. Eventually, the school expanded to over 350 acres, including a really big farm. And not only did the school expand, but her accreditation, or I don't know if that's the right word, her credit expanded too. She started going up to Boston and all around New England and doing speeches and touring and talking to people. The school itself got a whole lot of recognition. And over the course of her career, she received 6 honorary degrees. And when she wasn't doing speeches or on tour or educating kids, she was constantly trying to improve racial diversity in the South. It says she was a charter member of the Southern Commission for Interracial Cooperation, a charter member of the Southern Regional Council, a member of the Executive Board of the Southern Region of the Urban League, a member of the Negro Business League, and a member of the Home Nursing Council of the American Red Cross. And if that wasn't enough, in 1940, Governor Clyde Hoey, he appointed her to the State Council of Defense. And this was the first time a black person had ever been moved up to that role. So that really set a precedent. Then in 1945, she received the 2nd Annual Racial Understanding Award of the Council for Fair Play. This is a group of Northern and Southern people who, they all agreed that, you know, they were all aiming for racial harmony. I guess racial harmony is what it says. But, you know, I'm reading all this stuff, but really, I'm from the South. I'm from North Carolina. And we're talking now, 1940, 1945. I'd like to say we've came a long way as far as racial diversity, but, you know, back then, the stuff she achieved and the stuff she was allowed to achieve, it blows my mind that she made it as far as she did in the 40s. And it keeps going. She was the first black woman to be elected to the national board of the YWCA. And it says that this club, the YWCA, is normally white women in the South. So again, first black woman in this group, this usually all white group. Ultimately, she was the president of the Palmer Institute for 50 years. She resigned the presidency in 1952 and gave it to one of her former students, Wilhelmina M. Crossan, who's another North Carolinian from Warrington. She continued to work for the school for 3 more years as the director of finance, but her health started to really decline pretty soon after that, and she would ultimately die at age 77 on January 11th, 1961. Unfortunately, 10 years after Charlotte died, the school would close down. That would be 1971. Well, then in 1983, the General Assembly, well, they gave funds to the Institute to renovate the Palmer Institute to its original glory. And so today, right in the heart of Sedalia, you'll find the Charlotte Hawkins Brown Museum, which is inside the original Palmer Institute. And another thing I want to add, the Palmer Institute is the first historical site honoring an African American. It's also the first historical site honoring a woman. And now I want to get back to the town's history just to wrap this episode up. This whole time with Charlotte Hawkins Brown, the town of Sedalia was still unincorporated. It was just really a community. But then in the 70s, a bunch of residents there in Sedalia, they got organized by a guy named John Vaughn, and they started kind of talking about the need to be an incorporated town. And remember, they had Greensboro to the west, and they had Burlington to the east. Now, Greensboro is far larger than Burlington, definitely was back in the 70s, but you got to think they're surrounded by these two cities, and they're a thriving little town in the middle. I could see their desire for wanting to incorporate. And another thing that's kind of important, they were Sedalia. If they didn't really incorporate into their own town, a lot of the citizens were worried that they would just kind of be sucked up into the greater Greensboro area or the greater Burlington area. And there's a lot of history in Sedalia, as you can see, as I've talked about. And they really didn't want to lose that history. So eventually they got the ear of Senator Bill Martin, and he drafted up a bill or a letter to try to get them incorporated. And he gave it to the North Carolina Senate and House of Representatives. And right away there was opposition from Greensboro and Burlington. And I'm not sure all the details on what would happen to larger cities if a smaller town between them incorporated, but a big reason for the outcry was the boundary changes. Because now, I guess the way it works, Burlington goes out into the country, then you got Greensboro. You'll have to kind of make sure you have the boundaries of Sedalia laid out. And for all I know, it might be just a paperwork thing. You know, the pencil pushers may not want to do the paperwork. It also gives Sedalia a bigger voice in politics, and that can certainly affect Greensboro and Burlington. But ultimately, the bill was passed, and Sedalia became its own town in 1997. And the town motto is Sedalia, our heritage, our roots, our future. And today, the town of Sedalia has a population of about 620. And I've been through Sedalia. I didn't stop, and I wanted to go through before I recorded this episode, and I may... There's a chance I'll still go through the town before this episode comes out. But I've definitely been through, and I've seen the Palmer Institute. Back then, I didn't know what I was looking at. There was a historical sign, and I'm sure I glanced at it. But I didn't do the research at that time, so nothing really stood out to me, you know. Now that I know I've been through there, I would definitely like to go back and actually walk around the town a little bit. But that's my Sedalia episode. Okay. Erica and everybody else, I hope it was a good one. I started the research, and I had to read several articles to put together an episode. As important as Sedalia was, there's not immediately a whole lot of research or a whole lot of stuff to find on it. That may indicate that the town and its history are starting to slide into legend, into the past, you know. But I did some digging, and though I was worried I wouldn't be able to put together an episode, I hope I put together a good one. I've had a few listener suggestions in the past, and I looked and looked and looked, and there's just not enough information to even do an episode. And I have said this in past episodes. A lot of times I'll kind of put them in a different folder because I may be able to put them into a larger episode later on. So the suggestions that didn't work out, they're gone but not forgotten. Anyway, that is the end of episode 107. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And if you got an idea for an episode, definitely reach out. I want to hear all of them. And if you do suggest an episode, I have a few ahead of you, so it could be a little while before I get to it, but I definitely like researching the suggested episodes. And that's all I got. Don't forget to check the links below for everything else, and I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.